Welcome to Amnesty International's comedy podcast series. This year, Amnesty's had exclusive backstage access at two of the biggest events on the comedy calendar, the 2014 Edinburgh Festival Fringe and the Balham Comedy Festival in London. We'll be bringing you a series of interviews with some of the greatest stand-up comedians working today, and along with finding out about the business of laughter, we'll be chatting about life, politics, and human rights. This time, we're welcomed in to the hilarious and rambling mind of Canadian stand-up Tony Law. He'll be debating what you should and shouldn't joke about, revealing his latest movie role, and sharing his surprising talent for performing World War II aircraft impressions. Tony Law.
Yes?
Thank you very much for joining Amnesty International backstage at the Balham Comedy Festival.
Well, it's a pleasure. I like to pretend that I care. Because it's good for the image.
And you've just come off stage. How are you feeling?
Pretty tired.
So you're taking your new show, Enter the Tone Zone, up to Edinburgh this year. What can we expect to see besides the interpretive dance?
Shamanistic dance, trying to draw the dead out, or trying to come to terms with the dead, and hopefully, if I do it right, making people think about if someone or something close to them dies, that maybe a way to help heal themselves over that personal death is to think about other death and perhaps gain solace through that. I know it doesn't seem like it, and probably won't even when the show's finished, but that's what's meant to be.
But it is tinged with sadness, but you work around that and you bring it back to laughter.
Well, yeah, because death is sad, but then what are we supposed to do? All just be sad all the time? No, we've got to tackle it, face it straight on.
And are you looking forward to going up to Edinburgh?
Not really. It's always a bit of a shit fuck for the whole family because they've got 5-year-old twins. They hate having to be in a place like that. We'll try and do more shows with them this year. We always do a lot of shows, but it's like me and my wife and my two kids are like a little solid unit. And my wife is pulled in all directions. She's directing my show, helping me not come across as a total prick. And we've got to organize the twins and stuff. And so then she's got to deal with my stress and... So, not really. But I think once it gets going on about day 10, then it's fine.
Yeah.
Then we can start going to kids' shows and I can start stealing their ideas for next year.
Haven't your kids snuck on stage once whilst you've been on?
They've done that twice or three times, actually. Twice. Once. They first did it once at End of the Road. But that was sweet because they were just crying and Daddy was on stage. And the boy went on, and then the girl was like, oh, why is Daddy on? She just peed herself, so she was in these little yellow pants, naked. She ran on, so that was the first time. But the main one was at Latitude, not this last one, but the one before, where there was 7,000, 8,000 people there, and they just snuck on. Because my wife and I had a little bit of a code word. She's going to hate me for admitting this, but it's true. When we walked in, I saw Rich Hall, and I went, terrible up there, you can't hear yourself. And when we watched him, it was brilliant. He was storming it and he hated it. Then in the next act, who walked by us on our way and went, it was terrible, you can't hear yourself. But they looked like they were storming it. So I said to my wife, it's gonna be fine, I'm just gonna remember that and I'm gonna storm it. She said, well, if it's going shit, do you want me to let, because she knows the kids will try and get on stage, should I let them go? I went, well, yeah, if you want, but it won't, it's gonna be fine. So she then was backstage and couldn't hear anything and thought I was dying. When I wasn't, I was going, I've got this. She let go of their hands. One went that way, one went that way. They went up the ramp, and Mark Oliver was the compere. He tried to catch one. The security tried to catch the other one. But once one got on, the whole crowd goes, aww, right? And so I gave them the microphone, and they were like, hello. And the crowd's going, yay. And then the other one came out, and then they finally brought them microphones. And so I just took the piss out of them and their observational stand-up. So it ended up being pretty good. I got paid, and I probably did like 1 minute of material. They did it all.
And they stormed it for you.
They did. They did really good.
That's
yeah.
what you need. Release the children.
Yeah, yeah.
And I want to talk to you about the way you dress on stage. It seems to evolve every year.
Yes.
It seems to have gone from kind of a polar explorer theme to Viking-esque Genoese sailor.
Yeah, yeah. Moving all through the gears.
And the occasional unitard.
Yeah, so I'm bringing back the unitard type sitch, but putting tassels on it. So last year, it was more of a Who thing. So it was like a bit of a Keith Moon, Roger Daltrey. I got in thinking about that because of Roger Daltrey and his work with Teenage Cancer Trust.
Mm.
And then also him being a hero of mine when I was young. So I thought I'd bring a bit of that in. And then also I think I have a Keith Moon side of my personality. So I try and weave that in. And then so this year I have lots of more dancing. So I need something stretchy. So
yeah.
it's functional. And we're going to get tassels. So it's still a bit of the Who. But we're moving it up a gear. So we're well away from the travelers, you know, the Genoese sailors. We're moving on, and it's going to be shamanistic. It's just fun, and also it's a fun thing for me and my wife to do, is to talk about these things and go, what should we, why would we wear that? What does it mean?
So the Edinburgh crowd are in for a treat.
I guess, although it's stressful and worrying and horrific and worrying about doing a good show, it's a lot of fun we have as a family to work out what daddy's going to look like. And also, I don't know, I grew up loving rock bands from Britain, and they always have such style, and I like The Who, and I like, you know, loads of things. I just think you should get a costume on. Don't look clownish too much. But I think it's great to have a costume to change into.
And it gets you into the zone.
Yeah.
So I think it's really zone.
Into the tone zone, yeah. It's really hard to get into a gig when you, like tonight, I'm just wearing clothes, you know.
Mm. I think I've come across a video of you on the internet dressed as a stormtrooper.
Oh, yeah, that was.
But there's no context to it.
None.
you're having fun.
Yeah, I remember that. That was on a Channel 4 sketch show pilot, and they said, what would you like to wear? And I just said, stormtrooper, don't need the helmet. Just wanted to wear it. And then I was talking about art. And I was doing a thing about dogs painting, wasn't it?
Yeah, I
about
think so,
how
yeah.
hard it was.
I thought he's going to mention
train the dogs to play pool.
But I was thinking he's going to mention Star Wars in a minute.
Yeah, it became a thing.
Never did.
Yeah, there became a thing there for a few years where I would do or wear stuff where I wouldn't mention it. I had a 6-month period where I wore Mickey Mouse hands. And in 6 months I never mentioned them once. So I've had a few of those. I just thought, well, it's like the one shoe lying in the street. It's up to people to decide what it is. Making a joke out of it or an answer sort of ruins it.
It's
but Mickey Mouse hands is like, you know, and amongst sort of my hipster nerds, freak zone fans, it's fine because they get it. But if you go and do like a, you know, a Jonglers or something, gig, they, what was that? You know, they want to know. And that's what I'm like, no, I don't know. What?
I like it. Keep them guessing. Exactly.
I had one thing where I counted the fingers on. I can't remember how it went, but it was like 1, 2, 3. Yeah, 8.
So if I could take you back to the start of your career when you were clean shaven and wide eyed, when did you decide you wanted to become a comedian?
Do you know what? I never decided I wanted to become a comedian. I just felt I always was one. I was always a clown, just a clown. Insecure clown who and now having kids now, I've worked it out. If you're not getting enough attention or whatever, so if you laugh at I was just getting laughs and attention from being funny, and it just sort of develops and it goes on. Sarah Silverman wrote a good thing in a paper one time about her parents just, that's how she was getting her love off her mum and dad. And it just, so then she's just going to hone it without thinking of it. Her dad used to laugh at her for doing dirty jokes, so that's the way she went. And my mum and dad used to just laugh at just the most outrageous things I'd say. And then I've sort of passed it on to my daughter, who will just the craziest stuff she'll say, and then I'll just piss myself. There's a real connection. So, no, always a bit of a clown.
So would you be?
I never thought I could be a comedian because I was from a farm in Canada, and I thought that's what city people did. So it took me a long time to get confidence.
And you moved over here, and weren't you a bin man in the Royal Parks or something?
Yes. Yeah, I was bin man there. I drove the garbage truck because I could drive a garbage truck, and I picked up litter, and I did loads of jobs. Yeah, did that.
And I heard a tour guide around Europe.
Yeah, I did a tour guide as well. Yeah, I've done them all.
But you blagged your way through the history.
Well, yeah, because what happened is, this is in the olden days when I applied for the job, because I knew a lot about history, because I love history. They said, but you got to have at least a bachelor's degree. And I went, yeah, I got it. Okay, well, you got to send it over. And so I went, yeah, no, I'll contact the University of wherever it was that I went. And still not here. But then I got to the training trip. It was getting too late. But I was doing good on the training trip. So I went and did the training trip, came back. I was going, well, he's good. So I got the job. And then they sort of forgot about it. They kept asking. But I was always stuck with the Korean trips for my first year, yeah. Which was a lot of fun because they would have a translator with you, which bought you time to make shit up that you didn't know. Tony, the people want to know, what is this fountain? And it'd be just a random fountain on the outskirts of Paris with the coach drivers taking a wrong turn. Just a random stupid fountain. But it would buy me time while she was asking it. And I go, well, this is where the jackal tried to assassinate Charles de Gaulle. And it's now called Miss Me Fountains. And then you could sit back in your chair and listen to her talking back at them while you're looking out the front window. Bing lo ha mao. How do I miss me fountain, Charles de Gaulle? And you go, nice work, dude. So I riffed my way around Europe on that. But they were wonderful.
And it's before the days of Google, so I guess they couldn't.
Nobody could. Yeah,
got away with it.
Yep.
And so, as we discussed, you're from Alberta originally.
Mm.
Do you find there's a difference between Canadian and British sense of humour?
No. Well, no, because I don't. There's just a difference between humour in, globally. So. People want there to be a difference between German and English or French or Colombian or... But what I've found, and this is the good thing about being old, is that actually in each country there's the load of the same people who love the same humour in each country.
Hmm.
So it's more like belts of people going like that, if you know what I can mean. And so there's groups of people in Colombia who love the same humour as you do.
Yeah.
And throughout the world. And so there's Germans like me and Germans like you. And then there's rednecks in every fucking country in the world. And they like the same fucking bullshit. And then there's really ultra liberal people who don't know what they think. And they like the same. And then there's humorless people. But there's probably about 15% of all people, and I've made that figure up, in the world, in every country, who are clever and... kind, and they love the same sort of humor. So I don't. For me, I've never felt a nationality difference at all. So in Alberta, there's some cool oaks.
Yeah,
cool dudes would be the same as all my dudes.
Yeah,
over here.
So what's the furthest flung place you've gigged?
Shanghai. It's got to be Shanghai, I think. I don't know. I think Shanghai, Croatia. That's not so far.
And did you storm it?
Shanghai, no, I wasn't very good back then. And also, it depends where you go. Expats can be pretty cool in, like, Paris, because they're usually teachers and or whatever. But then sometimes when they're, like, oil executives or people trying to exploit the economy of a place, and they're like, I don't know. So, no, I don't remember about that.
And I turned on the TV, I think it must have been last year. I watched Sue Perkins' Heading Out comedy.
Oh, yeah.
And who did I see as a Dutch bodybuilder?
Yeah.
But your good self.
That was me. I was my favorite joke of that whole thing. And I didn't even watch the whole sitcom. I just trusted Sue would be all right, so I didn't have to. But she was great. Got to riff, and I picked her up to weigh her. And I can't remember. It was something like, she weighs like a juvenile leopard.
I thought it
was. And then girls would walk by, and I'd pick them up and weigh them. That's all. That's what I've taken from that. I fucking love that.
I thought it was great. I thought you really fit the part.
I know a lot of Dutch people. She's funny as fuck.
So is there more?
But she wrote that sitcom in I think like 2 weeks. She just went, wrote it, bang. Clever motherfucker.
But it didn't get
another season. I bet if she gave it like one more day,
yeah,
she would have got a second season. I think she just went, oh, fuck it, here you go. She's so much more clever and surreal than anyone knows. I love her. I adore her.
So is there more acting on the horizon for you?
Don't know. I refuse to go and chase it.
I've seen on IMDb that you are due to be in a horror film.
Oh, yeah. It's a Western noir horror film. Yeah.
Can you tell us about that?
No. Oh, I can tell you. I rode a stagecoach. Drove a stagecoach. Absolutely terrifying. And if you ever see me on the top riding, look closely at my eyes. I'm pretending I'm cool, but it's fucking horrific. I thought we were all gonna die. It's so terrifying in the mud. That was fun though. I got to dress up in all the clothes and that.
And you played the character of Yancey, I think.
Yancey, that's right. And I didn't even have to do an audition. I've just gone through this phase in the last year where I go, no, can't do it. And the more you say, can't do it, the more they go, yeah, well, okay, he doesn't have to come in for an audition. Well, he can do it online. So I did it on the phone and sent it in. So the more you say, I'm not bothered, the more you don't give a shit, like genuinely don't want something, the more you get. People say that. But that's amazing. That's the way it has to be.
Well, I can't wait to see it. When's it out?
No idea. I bet it's only going to make it out on like Netflix or something.
Yeah.
I saw a clip of me in it, and I can't bear to look at myself. But I think I might have been okay in it. But I didn't like the character. I was, really? What you doing? Where are you going to, mister? But I think it's going to be funny because the guy who plays Calhoun, the main guy, in the clip I saw, says his name four times, which is hilarious because, where are you going, mister? Name's Calhoun. And next minute, he meets the people inside the stagecoach. It's Calhoun. And he said Calhoun, and I thought, well, I think it might be funny. A lot of the actors didn't know it was a comedy.
Oh, really?
A comedy slash horror. Because nobody was told it. So everyone was playing it really straight. That's what they wanted.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I was pretty aware it was a... Well, there was one scene where there's like a... So there's a werewolf who rips apart a man's body. And we all come around the back looking for, and Calhoun sees him and he goes, over here. So we all come over and we have to bend down. And all these all the actors nowadays seem to do that real quiet thing where they don't move their lips. It's like a thing that everyone does, they realize. And so it's quite windy in the woods. And he said, oh, what we got here? Yeah. And it took so many takes. I go, what? I couldn't hear. Yeah, but I can't hear because I got my next line. It's like totally stand-up comedian and everyone's going, oh, for fuck's sake. Come on, Tony, just time it. Okay. Sorry, what? When do I go? But so he picks up some fur off the guy and he smells it and then he passes it up to me and I go, my line is go, grizzly? And he goes, no. And then I pass it to another guy and he smells it. And the other guy's in like Vikings. Like, these guys are fucking proper big actors, right? There's me in the middle. So the next cut, there's 70 crew, and they're all ready for the next one. I go, okay, go again. He picks it up, smells it, passes it to me, and I go, panda? Oh, fucking love that. Like, there was a killer panda on the loose.
So you're popular with the other actors?
Oh, I don't know. I hope so. I do like actors, though. They're better than us comedians.
Well, I can't wait.
They're more
to see
giving.
I can't wait to see it in the cinemas, hopefully.
No, it won't be. Never. No fucking way.
So back to your comedy. Your shows usually have a kind of subtle sociological message. Who would you say your targets are?
My target? What? The people I don't like?
Mm, yeah.
Bullies. All the bullies. Sexists. Misogynists. They're the main ones. Just like being in love with someone and having a daughter and all that. Them. Mm. Yeah. You know, when you're in love with someone who's like smart and clever and you think, holy fuck, and then you hear their stories. And, you know, not like fucking, a guy fucking felt my ass in the tube. Like, not that. I mean, serious.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? So that.
I mean, I've heard you say that.
Bullies. Just people who. I don't mind people being pricks in life, but the target should be worthy.
Mm.
Someone should be worthy of the target, not the weak. Never bully the weak.
Never punch down.
No, exactly. Yeah. God, I'm going to... I've been looking for a phrase, honestly. Never punch down.
You can have that.
Yeah, I will. Unless you're into like just like punching your knob, because that's what you're into. But that's fine. You're only doing it to yourself. Wow, that didn't need to come in there at all. Yeah, I mean, but if that's sort of a, in my simple, badly educated mind, means everything, covers everything.
Mm.
Just fucking bullying. Just being a prick. And then, you know, because there's been points in my life where I think, and also when it's pointed out by your loved ones when you've been a prick, it's hard to go, I am, so...
So in that respect, do you think comedy can change anything?
No. Well, no, I don't think... I don't know. Never really... I don't know any... It's a general thing, isn't it? Everything can slowly. So if you go to comedy and people are doing bullying things... If you go to a comedy show and someone's saying to a crowd member, to a man is saying to a man, who would you rather fuck, a 14-year-old who looks like an 18-year-old or an 18-year-old who looks like a 14-year-old. To me, that's fucking disgusting. To the 18-year-old, because you're just saying, who'd you rather fuck, a woman who looks 14? More importantly, you're saying to all the 14-year-old girls out there that you're just, a child.
Mm.
You're saying, you're saying you're just fucking shit. Like, it's a more horrific line than people seem to give it credit for.
Mm.
It's like, I think it's fucking horrible. It's disgusting. Imagine being a 14-year-old girl in this world and then having something horrific happen to you, and then some prick goes on stage and says that.
Mm.
I think it's disgusting.
Seems a whole
And I am disgusted with myself for being too cowardly to have gone up to him afterwards and gone, dude, the fuck?
Mm.
I didn't, though.
Yeah.
I sort of just snuck off and thought, oh, I'm going to mention that in my comedy shows. But I felt cowardly. My wife wanted to say something, but you know, that's I'm not brave sometimes. But so I forgot the question.
Oh well, it's kind of leads into my next question, because Amnesty supports the right to freedom of expression, but do you think there are some comedians, particularly recently, who rely on that kind of shock and offence model of comedy?
There was a bunch of big guys making millions of pounds that were doing it there for a while, and that just got to the point where it was a little bit... Well, it's not very... well, they're not really thinking too much about what they're saying. I mean, I've been in positions where I've said things I hadn't thought about, but they were millionaires doing it. And I'm lucky because I got someone who can monitor me and say, hey, dude, I know you're a good person, but this is what you said.
Mm.
Clearly there. But what's happened now is, there for a while, you got these sort of right on cool dudes who are really lovely comedians. There was we used to call them the hanging around gang, but they're like backpacks on the back. There's like, who walked the walk? They were good guys saying good things and being nerds. But then you've suddenly found this, there's another bunch who've come along who are trying to pretend they're like them, but saying the horrific things that these other guys are saying.
Mm.
And, I think it's time for one of the cool rock and roll motherfuckers to stand up and go, hey, pretend nerds. Leave it to the real nerds. Because rock and roll's in town. We're going to shut you down. No, but you know what I mean.
Yes. Yeah.
It's like they want to be cool because... So some people... this isn't comedians, because this goes out and someone's going to get fucking... Someone's going to be on acid at some festival and going, you think that I'm this? And oh, God. I don't. It's just like some people will think it's... I can be a hipster and I got a beard, but I can also say that about 14-year-olds.
Yeah.
Human, female, women, children. Yeah, so it's like a style rather than... so it's weird how things can morph.
Mm.
And then like... some acts can be deemed naff just because they're a bit like, hey, I don't know. Yeah, I think then there's enough of an answer in there. Good luck editing that. That is confusing.
It's fine. It's fine. And talking of your rights.
Talking of the right?
Talking of your rights.
Rights.
The Conservatives recently said they might scrap the Human Rights Act after the next election. What do human rights mean to you?
Well, what is the Human Rights Act?
It's all sorts of things, like the right to education, the right to marry, the right to for free speech, as we said.
Yep. And so the what? What's happening?
Well, the Conservatives are talking about that they might scrap it after the next election.
Jesus Christ. God, this is the thing about not being politically engaged. I think that I have to stick to what I'm doing and then have guys like you to tell me. And then I can go, oh, whoa, 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 that's going on? Well, do you know what I think? That's bad. I think we need some people standing up for bullies. Just like we need to not execute people who are innocent. That one seems so logical, that one. Mm. Well, if you get one who didn't do it, at least you got the other nine who did. Wow, okay, sure. Mm. So what's stopping me from shooting you right in the face right now? Thing is, I think, wow. Well, that's awful. I can't believe that they would even suggest that.
It is quite a surprise.
Do you think they're fooling us with something? How are they getting that across? It's because our image is bad, isn't it? People who give a fuck. We've got a terrible image. We're not tough enough. Or we're too humorless and maybe militant. You know, like in feminism, certainly there was a phase where it's like, oh, uppity, uppity. Maybe sarcasm and maybe more men beating sexist men to death. Is that too strong? Actually, that's going against what I think.
It's going against what Amnesty.
But there's got to be, the thing that they do, the right-wing nasty people, is what they do is, because they don't give a shit, is they manage to give across an image of, hey, I'm just being funny, while saying horrific things. And then when people get really upset on the left or whatever side you call it, we end up going, no, you can't do that. That's because we are put on our back foot. This is what happens in my family all the time.
And so finally, Tony, whilst you lean out the window...
I bought a sword.
What for?
What do you think? Human rights. Nobody needs to know about my sword. And nobody needs to know it's folded iron done from the Teutonic Knights.
Good.
I could tell you more about the sword, but I don't want you to know about it. No, well, but I think... No, we need to re-own stuff in life. We need to get back... You know, like, it's amazing how these conservative-type people can, like, behave appallingly, and then, oh, the liberals out there with all their homos and their the thing, and, yeah, but all the people are having affairs, that's an interesting thing. You're probably not going to be, your lawyers won't let you put this in. But something to do with infidelity, where amongst conservative voters in North America and here, is something like triple...
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, so if we're having the odd orgy here and there, we're not cheating. I don't know, that didn't sound right, that, but you know what I meant.
I know what you mean.
No, it's just horrible. I hate the hypocrisy. Do you know World War II fighter airplanes?
Yeah.
Okay, we're going with British planes now. And by the way, I've always been into these things since I was a kid. But my wife came home one night, this is a few years ago now, and... You know when you snap the laptop shut?
Yep.
You know, sometimes...
Oh, yeah.
Say, it's not me, but say other people, you're watching porn, you don't want to get embarrassed. Well, I slapped the fucking computer shut because I was on a website, which there's no visuals, where I was learning aircraft noises, and I was too embarrassed. She said, what have you been up to? I went, nothing. She opened it up the next day. Oh, my God. Such a dick.
Well, I'd like to say so we've all been there.
Okay, here we go. This is a classic one. This is the workhorse.
Spitfire.
No, that was the Hawker Hurricane.
Ah.
I see the lower rev rate. It's a 12-cylinder, but that's as high as you could rev it. Made 30% of balsa wood, the Hawker Hurricane. Lovely gun platform. Top speed, 280 miles per hour.
What else we got?
No, did it wrong. Wait. That was the Supermarine Spitfire. Mach 8.
I thought it was Mach
They're
7.
Very subtle when you get between them. And then...
Lancaster Bomber.
Hawker Typhoon.
Ah.
Yeah, Lancaster Bomber can't do four engines.
Ah.
So what I did one time was record my voice four times. I did.
See, the thing, I believe you.
Yeah. And now I know all the players that play for Arsenal, so I get into different things. I should find things that are more productive.
None of the other comedians I spoke to this week have covered World War II engines.
No, I shouldn't have brought that in.
And finally, Tony.
Yeah.
You've played the Bedford in Balham quite a few times, I imagine.
Yep.
How do you... Is it good coming back here?
Always, yeah. They were the first guys who ever gave me my first 20-minute set. And they would book me back no matter what. And I have died on my hole here over the last 12, 13 years, but they keep bringing me back. They don't care, because they like me. And then the audience likes you too. So sometimes you can really like storm it. So I've got a bit of a following in this area. But no, Dave and these guys, I don't think they'll ever stop booking me. I've tried my hardest to make it impossible for them to bring me back, but they keep bringing me back. But that's them, though, because they are the pioneers of proper alternative comedy.
So will we see you here next year?
Of course. As many times as Dave will have me. Absolutely. I'll never stop playing here. I'm going to be the oldest hipster in town.
Well, Tony Law, thank you so much for joining us. And
my
I can't wait to see your Edinburgh show.
Thank you very much. Cheers, mate.
If you're interested in learning more about human rights or joining Amnesty International, then please go to our website, amnesty.org.uk, and make sure you don't miss our next episode. Here's a sneak peek.
The idea of the show Marxists in Town that I first had was that there is something that I just find brilliantly delightful about the difference between everywhere in Britain, that one town is so different from the place up the road. And I love those little quirks. I love the fact that you go to Barnsley and it's different from Huddersfield. Folkestone is different from Margate. And the little things that make it different and distinct.